Museums need to be for anyone, but they can't be for everyone.
On today's episode, we have a return guest. Stephen Riley runs the think tank Re Museum. We spoke to Stephen last season as the think tank was just rolling out. A couple of weeks back, Re Museum dropped a new report, what they call Case Studies and Innovation, about the role of marketing in museums and the challenges institutions face with this surprisingly polarizing topic. To read the study in full, visit remuseum.com. We caught up with Stephen while he was in Miami for Art Basel and all of the surrounding art fair hoopla. The call was a bit impromptu, and he was kind enough to duck into a sandwich shop and chat for a bit. Miami is a vibrant, bustling place. You'll hear a bit of that in the background. Let's call it local flavor. From Philbrick Museum of Art and Public Radio Tulsa, I'm your host, Jeff Martin, and this is Museum Confidential.
So I wanted just to check in, you know, about this new study that you guys put out about marketing in museums. It's been getting a pretty good amount of play, and, you know, that's always a hot topic. You know, had you guys been working on this for quite some time? Is that an area that you've really been wanting to dive into for a while as you've been doing this re-museum project?
Well, it's interesting. One of the things we note in the report, Jeff, is that people actually can have very strong reactions even to the word marketing in museum land, which is interesting because we also note that museums are, you know, enterprises or institutions that need to attract visitors and engage visitors in order to fulfill their missions. And most enterprises in America that seek to attract and engage visitors out of members of the public engage in something called marketing, but we sort of have mixed feelings about it. But yeah, we've been looking at it a while, and a little over a year ago in partnership with Art Bridges Foundation organized a gathering of museums that were also really interested in looking at really the triangle of issues, as I call it, the three-legged stool of access, audience development, and marketing, which are kind of facets of the same issue of how do we fulfill our missions by impacting and engaging the largest and broadest audience possible.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's, you have some great quotes here from people, you know, as far back as say 30, 35 years ago, who really kind of were almost allergic to the concept. And that's obviously changed a lot. One of the things you note here, of course, is, you know, you drop some great stats. You know, you say that the kind of national average is about 3% or so of operating budgets at museums are dedicated to marketing. Do you see that as something that people were making conscious decisions to choose that, or has that just been kind of the norm and people haven't addressed it? Like, that's just always been there and we just kind of never pay attention to it, or it's like an actual choice to kind of marginalize that aspect of the museum's budget?
Yeah, I see a little two possible answers, because I don't really have a real answer to that. But on the one hand, museum budgets are tight, and I think we've also often felt that we had an audience that came to us appreciating art and art history and didn't need to be, you know, reached out to in some market-driven way. And so there was both kind of a feeling that it wasn't really the business we were in to try to lure people in, but also that we didn't really have the money for it. And I think for a long time, you know, that worked pretty well for museums. And yet, if you really look at them fulfilling their ambitions and missions and bringing to life these giant buildings many of them have built, they need to figure out how to expand and broaden their audience. At the same time, you know, you would say, well, that's not a crazy thing for kind of cultural nonprofits to have looked at. But, you know, one of the other data points we share, pulling on data from SMU Data Arts, is that the performing arts, nonprofit performing arts sector, has been investing a lot more in marketing. And maybe it's because they have to get people to buy a ticket to fill a seat at 8 p.m. on a Thursday night. But it's an interesting contrast. And I just think museums should be asking themselves, you know, what are our goals in terms of attracting and engaging the public? Who's coming to our museum now? Where's the gap? And how and what amount should we be investing to fulfill our goals and our missions?
Yeah, you know, you talk a fair amount in the study about the idea of a museum needing a persona or some kind of identity, which seems very obvious in a certain sense, but it's not something that museums have easily adapted to. You know, what do you mean by that when you talk about a persona in relation to a museum?
Yeah, we do tell stories from a couple of museums that are doing this really well, like the Peabody Essex M in Salem, Massachusetts, and the Art Gallery of Ontario. You know, this is sort of standard issue in marketing, but for nonprofits and museums, it's still pretty novel. We think about the audiences we want to generate often in demographic terms, like we want to get, you know, older visitors or more male visitors or more visitors of color or more visitors who don't have college degrees. But we don't often recognize that that's not necessarily the way that people think of themselves or the way, you know, you don't talk to someone and say, hey, as a, you know, older person of color without a college degree, would you like to come to our museum? Mm-hmm. People live their lives on their terms. And so a practice in marketing is to find what's actually motivating people, what kinds of things in museums would motivate them. And so these museums have adopted personas, which are built around issues of, you know, are people driven by the social connections that museums can drive, or the ability to go deep in learning about art history and artists, or some other factor? And so it requires a couple things. One is actually really meeting people where they are, the motivations and intentions that drive lives like ours, right? All of us operate that way. And it's also realizing, as I say, that museums need to be for anyone, but they can't be for everyone. And I think it also requires a kind of targeting that we haven't always felt comfortable with, to say, it's not that we're trying not to be for somebody, but we have limited resources and capacity to tell our story. And we have to really figure out who are the most likely audiences we can attract among those that we're seeking to attract. And the approach of using personas can be a really good way to do that.
We actually traveled to the Peabody Essex for this season already and did a show up there with them, and they were doing some interesting work. How did you land on them and Ontario, you know, for your case studies? You know, was that hard to find the right people to focus on, or how did you cast that net?
I'm trying to remember right now. I mean, one thing interesting about the Peabody Essex, it's a very well-resourced museum in a relatively small town of Salem, Mass. And as a result, they've had the, you know, so some of it is they have the resources, but they've also had the intentionality to invest an unusually high amount of money for an art museum in both digital research and in marketing. So they've gone much farther than other museums in understanding, you know, exactly. You really, marketing is not just selling, it's first understanding who's coming. And they've done a lot of that work. And then they've did a lot of qualitative and quantitative research to realize who could they get to come. It doesn't mean they're changing their work or the quality of their work or dumbing it down. They just want to figure out, are there new ways they could be telling the story, engaging the public to attract those broader audiences that all museums want. And they also have a great chief marketing officer who came out of the agency world and was devoted to the mission of the museum, but had experience and perspective from other sectors. The Art Gallery of Ontario is a big museum in Canada's fastest growing and most diverse city. And as a result, they've been really called to address that rapidly changing audience in ways most museums don't have either the opportunity or the commitment of doing, maybe. And they've just done an extraordinary job of making the museum's work relevant to increasingly large numbers of that, you know, fast changing and unique city in North America.
Another person you cite in the study is Colleen Dillenschneider, who's been a guest on the show before, and she's done a lot of kind of work in this area also looking at this, and she posits that to really hit the goal that most museums are looking for in terms of reach and hitting the public spheres that they want to be. They need to be investing somewhere between, say, 14 and 18-ish% of their budget to marketing, which would be a pretty major sea change. Did you see any organizations that are actually doing that level of spend, or is that more aspirational?
I don't know of an American art museum that is spending anywhere near that. I think the ones I know that are really pushing it are maybe getting close to 8 to 10%. By Colleen's numbers, that would mean multiplying by fivefold the amount that most American museums spend on marketing. And, you know, my view with Green Museum is not just this simplistic idea of museums just need to multiply their investment in marketing, but I do think it calls on museums, their leadership, and their boards to be asking, you know, what are our goals in terms of penetration and engagement of our communities? Who do we want to attract? Who are we attracting now? And what are the steps, reasonable steps and investments that we should be making based on a lot of other benchmarks out there to bridge that gap and achieve and fulfill our missions? And I don't think a lot of museums are really thinking about that. I mean, I talked to recently the chair of a major urban museum and, you know, said they have no data on actually who's visiting their museum today. You know, Peabody Essex, which we mentioned, does something really interesting. They use anonymized cell phone technology, which is now really rapid and safe and secure way to figure out, identify, you know, demographically who's coming to their museum, not by name, but by zip code, and then to understand what are the education levels, household income levels, and areas of our community that where we are engaging people, and therefore where are the ones where we have work to do. And so it really means starting from a space of curiosity and then an openness to realize that the amazing work museums are doing is not on its own enough to attract the audiences they seek and deserve for that work, without doing some kind of deeper understanding and investment and understanding and attracting those people.
This episode of Museum Confidential is brought to you by surveys. People say knowledge is power, and surveys are one of the best ways we have to capture said knowledge. We know you hate them. I mean, who doesn't? It's okay to admit it. You're busy. Time is precious. Yada, yada, yada. Hannibal Lecter once cannibalized a census taker. For goodness sake, we understand. And you have our sympathies. Sometimes you're just trying to get home, and that pesky person with the clipboard dares to make eye contact. You can't get away. They just have a few questions. Maybe there's some candy in it for you if you should respond, or a tote bag. Gift or no gift, we really do need the info. And surveys, despite your valid feelings, do get the job done for us. Take one for the team. Take the survey.
You're talking to us today from the hustle and bustle of Miami for Art Basel, and you've taken some time to chat with us kind of almost as a roving correspondent, but I appreciate that. And I'm curious, you're going to be down there with lots of leaders from different museums. You've been a director of a museum yourself. Do you think if you had one-on-one chats with, you know, directors from various museums, would they agree that this level of spending should be there? They just don't have the resources. Like, you know, do you think this would be like, yeah, if we could, we would, or they just, you know, don't think that it's necessary to spend this level of recommended dollars on marketing?
Well, I believe 100% that museum leaders are committed to attracting and engaging, you know, bigger and broader audiences for the amazing work they and their colleagues are doing. I do think there are mixed feelings still about this. I think many would appreciate more money, but I think others, and maybe here in Miami, is evidence that, you know, there's a lot of focus on growing their collections, cultivating collectors. What's the state of the market? Which are all really important things to many museums, but they're different from the questions back home of how do we make our work matter to more people and succeed, you know, as institutions. And so I think it's been a slow turn for them to separate the genuine and deep merit of the work that they are doing with the separate challenge of attracting people to it. And it, you know, it is interesting. I think some of those 30 or 40 year old attitudes we document in our report are still present to the degree that it's hard to, when your work is hard and meaningful and of great value, it can be hard to realize that that's not necessarily enough on its own to attract the audiences you see. But it's also true that in almost every other sector of quality cultural production in America, people realize and industries realize that creating the amazing work is the first step, and then finding and attracting the audience to it is another one that's equally deserving of attention and investment.
You know, I'm curious, you know, museums, of course, are not a monolith, and there's all kinds of different, you know, sectors of museums. But did you notice any difference in the attitude towards this amongst, say, art museums versus science museums versus natural history museums, you know, children's museums? Because it does seem like the attitudes change based on the audience and the sector.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. We didn't really analyze this, but, you know, when you talk about children's museums, one of the easiest things for them is that their target audience is pretty easy to define. You know, yeah. I had young children. You know, when you're in the audience of a children's museum, if you're an adult, it's because you have young children or you're a young child yourself. And I do think for museums, it is this challenge of genuinely wanting to be for everyone, but then realizing or learning that you can't actually present yourself that way, that's not a path to success. You actually have to figure out who and how you want to attract people in order to do it. And as I said, that doesn't mean being exclusive or telling people you're not for them, but it means using your limited resources to figure out where and how are you most likely to capture the audiences you seek to fulfill your mission and your work.
Final thing is, when you put out a case study like this in 2025, given the various ways, you know, we're able to disseminate information, is it easier to get a case study into the general conversation flow that's happening out there in the industry right now in the museum world with all the tools that we have at our disposal? Or are things like white papers and case studies less impactful now? Talk about, you know, the work you're doing at ReMuseum, and, you know, are you seeing some of the results of doing all this research and all this work?
Great question. You know, when I started this work, Jeff, I said I wasn't going to publish a white paper because there were already a lot of white papers and they didn't seem to be making a lot of difference. And so one of the, you know, we've done a little bit of that, sharing insights through research reports, but we also really like this process of sharing what we, you know, we're framing this as case studies and innovation. So calling examples to leaders who are doing things differently, the goal not being that there's one right way for museums to operate, but we need to be encourage a field where there are lots of ways to be successful, and we're encouraging and learning from all of them. And I feel that that part is working. Here in Miami, as you said, I'm seeing a lot of museum people, and a museum director told me last night at dinner that she had taken insights from ReMuseum's work to each of her last three board meetings to prompt discussions. And her board seemed really encouraged and satisfied with that. I think we're really, you know, it's a challenging time for museums, but that doesn't mean people aren't ready to be engaged in the challenges, you know, rising to meet those challenges with this amazing resource we have, which is the work of incredible artists and art itself. So I hope that these examples are showing there are models out there that are trying new things and learning from them, or trying new things and learning from them because they succeed, and trying new things and learning from them because they didn't turn out as planned, because the field is going to need a lot more innovation and experiments to figure out how to fulfill its missions of engaging the broadest possible audiences and paying its bills.
Yeah. Well, hey, Stephen, I really appreciate you taking some time while you're down there in Miami to chat with us. And I hope you have a great time. Enjoy that nice weather. And I hope we can talk to you again soon.
Always learn from what you're doing. Thanks for putting up with the background music from South Beach.
Hey, we expect all nothing right. less than a party down there. Thanks so much.
Okay. We'll be following. Bye-bye.
Well, that's our show for this week. Museum Confidential is produced and edited by Scott Gregory in the studios of Public Radio Tulsa. To learn more about the station or the museum, visit publicradiotulsa.org or philbrook.org or both. As always, we suggest both. Until next time, look closer.